You're listening to Face Off, episode 113, recorded March 21st, 2011. Welcome to Face Off, your face-to-face web technology podcast. I am one of your hosts, Jade Robbins.
And I am your other host, Mark Sanborn.
In this podcast, we talk about web technology, specifically web development, social media, and web entrepreneurship. As always, you can get the episodes for this show by going to our friendly Face Off website, faceoffshow.com.
All right. Let's get into our news and follow-ups this week.
Our first news and follow-up was it was a question emailed by one of our listeners, a friend of ours actually named Shane Callahan, a guy we knew back in high school. He was sending a suggestion. He was like, listen, you know, you guys have the embedded MP3 player on your website. He's like, it would be really handy if when you clicked on that to play, it would open in a new window. So that way, when I go to follow all the links and stuff on your website, my audio wouldn't be interrupted. Well, I thought this is a good time to have an age-old discussion that you and I have had, and I've actually figured out what I'm going to do. This episode today on Face Off, we are interviewing a user interface, user experience expert, and I'm going to ask him to settle this question once and for all, Mark, because I believe links, external links should open in a new window, but you are on the other side. You believe they don't.
That, you know, I had no idea where you're going with this, but that's great. I mean, having a usability expert settle this score for us once and for all. I like this.
Yeah.
I'm kind of on, I think all links should just be, links, and then you middle click or whatever if you want to open them in a new tab. Links should be created equally.
Well, you're wrong. Anyways, let's move in. So let's ask. We'll ask him, and he'll actually tell us. He'll tell us who's right and who's wrong. Even though I know I'm right, I'm used to it. Before we continue, let's talk about our first sponsor of this episode, helping us pay the bills. It is actually the application we wrote called AgileTask. AgileTask is your personal backlog tool with an agile workflow, tagging for organizations and achievements. And now I want to advertise. You can go to blog.agiletask.me and you can actually see a blog where me, you, and Rob were doing things like we're collecting productivity articles, agile articles, software development articles, and blogging about them, talking about them a little bit. Nothing too heavy. You know, we try to keep it pretty short and light. In the, we don't want to like write a 4 or 5 page blog post. Everyone's busy anyway. So, quick little food for thought about productivity, agile, plus announcing things like new features and asking our users questions and stuff. So check it out. Go to blog.agiletask.me. And if you haven't tried the app yet, go to agiletask.me. Sign up for a 30-day free trial. And you know what? Here, I'm going to throw it out. If you sign up for a 30-day trial and you say, man, I don't think this is worth it, leave some feedback. There's a feedback tab on the right-hand side. Tell us what would make you use it? Why would it stay? Why didn't you like it? Or if you do like it, let us know. Love to hear from people using the application. So let's move on into our geek tool of the week. So Mark, I got a story for you. me and our friend Robert Lund the other day decided to go get lunch. And it was Sunday, so it was like, let's go get some lunch, it'd be fun. We went to this restaurant it's named La Paria, which we've been to. They sell awesome burritos. They have some really fun ones. So we got our burrito. We were so excited. And we sat down at this table, and it just was so wobbly that it spilled Rob's water, like all over the table. And what's funny is I had this these geek tools planned for a little while, but I never really pulled the trigger on them. And then this happened, and I was like, ha! It is time to bring out the wonky table stabilizer keychain, because what it is, Mark Sanborn, is a little sort of wedge thing that fits on your keychain or anything else that has like a little keychain lock to it that you can keep with you and slide underneath tables, desks, or anything that is not level to help stabilize it so you won't have to deal with spilt water.
Not only that, it's in the shape of a key, so you don't have to look like you're carrying a wedge around on your keychain.
Now,
you don't
I
have
know.
To look like you just stole it from a convenience store or something.
Now, I mentioned this to our friend Rob, which he immediately said, I'm not going to carry around a stupid wedge on my keychain, and I'm not going to put it underneath a table and then grab it when I'm done. That's just stupid. So for the dissenters like Rob, we have the Wobble Wedges Leveling Shims, a set of 12 for only $12.19. That's cheap enough that you can just leave it if you want.
There you go.
Yeah, put underneath the table. And then you know what? Actually, doing a public service. It costs you a little money, but you're doing a public service. The next person that comes down, if they don't have a Wobble Wedge keychain or the table key to wonky, the wonky table key, oh my goodness, the wonky table stabilizer keychain, if they don't have one of those, you've helped them out because guess what? The table's not wobbly now. So check them out.
So if you love your La Paria burrito shop as much as we do, grab the Wobble Wedge and go and fix those wobbly tables.
Some Wobble Wedge, and I'll sneak in some super glue. I'm going to super glue those things to the table. Help out your local burrito shop. Let's move on to our web apps. Both of them this week actually submitted to us on Twitter by our friend Philip Downer, who's submitted several things to the show. We always appreciate it. The first one is Hacker Buddy. This is a really simple web app. It's one of those ones that just does something simple and does it well. It's really cool. Its title is Hacker Buddy, Free Karma for Helpful Hackers. So what this site does is it lets you sign up. And when you sign up, you say what your specialties are, what you do good, what, you know, I like Rails, MySQL, NoSQL databases, Python, PHP. And when people need help, or if you need help, you can request help in particular categories, and you may get picked to be one of the people that gets to help someone, and you just help them out with their little problem and feel good about yourself knowing that you've given something back to the community.
Cool. So can you request help too? Is it kind of an exchange thing?
No, you request help. You're like, man, I need help. And also, like, you can go in if you want that. You can browse all the existing users. So like, I can see old A. Anthony here. He has his website there. Wait, no, where's another one? So 5L is a Ruby on Rails developer. So he must have checked. Let's go look here. You know, he checked that he's good at hacking JS, Ruby, and HTML. He has his Twitter and Hacker News links in there. And so I'm assuming if someone says, hey, I need help with Ruby, he's one of the many people that could get pulled. All this app does is basically connect you via email. Just sends out an email to both of you, connecting you, giving each other's email so that you can help out. And help another guy out, and you know, when you need help, you can use it too.
There's 1,072 pages of 10 usernames here, so there's quite a bit of hackers to find here.
Yeah, so 1,072 people on the website.
If you need some help, go there and get it from another hacker buddy.
Absolutely. Check it out. The next web app that was submitted by Philip. This is funny because I actually, in the same day, Phil tweeted this out. And also, I heard it from another coworker. So I was like, well, I got to talk about that on the next Face Off. It's After the Deadline, which what's really cool about After the Deadline, first of all, I want to say it's done by the Automattic guys who make WordPress, VideoPress, all those, really cool company. I like Automattic a lot. Either they acquired this or it was an interim project. I don't know, but After the Deadline, what it does is, you know, we're so used to spell checking now. Almost every modern browser has built-in spell checking. It's turning our culture into idiots because we can't spell and we depend on the technology. That's true. I'm guilty as charged, but one of the things a lot of people used to write emails in Word, like in Outlook, you could have the option to write your emails in Word. One nice thing about Microsoft Word doing that was that it actually did things like grammar check and, suggestions to your writing, like contextual, style checking. After the Deadline actually does that for you. It's a browser plugin. So they have like a bookmarklet. They have a Chrome one, a Firefox one. They also have ones for like things like Intense Debate, OpenOffice.org. You know, you can get a plugin for your WordPress blog, and it does spelling, grammar checking, and style checking for you. Well, we'll give you suggestions for that. So pretty awesome.
Yeah, we reviewed a web app that kind of did this, but this is great that it's just a bookmark or an extension to Chrome or Firefox.
It can be
an
extension or a bookmarklet. I mean, that's the cool part. Like if you don't want it on all the time, put the bookmarklet up. Write something, click the bookmarklet, and it'll check it out for you. Pretty handy.
Yeah, I mean, you can set up a little hotkey, control shift S or whatever, and show all the little mistakes. Exactly. So go proofread your sites. We should probably do that.
Proofread your content. I'm not going to do that. I like my mistakes, Mark. It makes me, it makes me not a robot, I think, All right, so before we get into our interview, our second sponsor I want to thank is, of course, The product done by our very own Mark Sanborn, Rocket Ship It. Rocket Ship It is the easy way to get rates from UPS, USPS, and FedEx. What is it? Rates, labels, tracking, all that stuff. What do you got in there, Mark?
Yep, shipping, labels, tracking, and rates.
And rates. So check it out by going to Rocket. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say address validation, too.
Oh, that's nice. Yep. You know, it's nice and sometimes it isn't. I mean, I hate sites that won't let me put in what I actually write because so I work on campus. And so like for campus, I can just put the room number and then the hall name. And then for this address too, you put MSU campus and every single shipper will ship it right. But it never validates on any address validator whatsoever. And so some sites, it's funny, like I couldn't get stuff shipped to work unless I put in the PO box, which we have a PO box for our room, but I can never remember it. It's much easier to remember the room name because I'm there. And so I like it when websites let me just, you know, they do the old, like, you know, at your own risk, you know,
yeah,
this address doesn't validate. You may not get your stuff. And it's like, it's okay. Don't worry.
Yeah. That's a good way to do it. Allow them to do it, but get the disclaimer or warning.
Yeah, you know. So check it out by going to Rocket. Well, I guess it's, you know, right now you've got it out for PHP. It's a super easy to use library. Excellent support. Mark is on the ball constantly. In fact, I can never hang out with you. You're always doing support requests. Goodness.
They're coming in and
answering people's questions as much as you can. Check it out by going to rocketship.it. With that in mind, let's get into our interview this week, which is with user interface, user experience expert, Vasily Mizin. All right, I want to welcome our special guest today, Vasily Mizin. He is a user interface, user experience expert?
Yeah, I guess a little bit of both. UX, UI.
Vasily, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, kind of what you've been doing in the past, you know, some of your credentials and whatnot.
Okay, so I've been around computers since I was probably 10. I've been into various types of networks. I've been a FidoNet user. I used to have my own BBS, and then the internet came around. I was a teenager in Russia, you know, one of the first people to conquer the internet in my hometown. I think I made my first website in 97, or maybe 96 even. Yeah. So then I moved to the United States, and now I am in Los Angeles, California.
Wow, that's great. Quite a journey, huh?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm still staying true to my original calling, which is computers and programming and design.
Yeah, me too. I started in the web, and it's the platform I enjoy the most, I think. And I think we're seeing it sort of really start to blossom as the sort of de facto platform and how things go. I mean, I don't even think of desktop apps a whole lot anymore.
I would say that can be all bundled together, you know, desktop, web, I don't know, it's the whole evolution, you know, of PCs. I feel like I've seen quite a bit of it, you know, especially considering how scarce the resources were back in the day. And my mom, thankfully, she was an editor of a university newspaper, so she used to work at the university, and there were a lot of computers in the university, so I had many opportunities to bug hardcore developers, like, hey, can you please teach me C++? I'm like, oh, are you sure, kid? Yeah.
So you have experience with doing some of the desktop apps as well as web design and UI?
Back in the Borland days, you know, the Borland C++ and stuff like that, you know, I was trying. I think my main interests were basically related to user interface. I like pull-down menus and checkboxes and radio buttons and labels and all this kind of stuff. I think I was really attracted to the user interface of Borland compilers when the Borland editors, and I was trying to replicate the pull-down menus and all that stuff, and it hit me like years later that that was my true calling, that I really liked the user interface more than anything else. My C++ didn't evolve into anything sophisticated. I kind of dropped it when I was a teenager. Yeah.
Huh, and so from there, just your sort of interest in the user interface just sort of, I did it just naturally sort of move over into the web?
There was a big gap, and I kind of came back to it years later. But, you know, as everyone else, I was interested in, as everyone else who was exploring the web in those early days, I was interested in like GeoCities, this type of stuff, you know, like make a home page, you know, with your picture in it, mm-hmm. you know, and your bio and some random sub pages and stuff like that.
So we have it on record. A user interface usability guy said he liked GeoCities. On the record.
Yes. GeoCities is an Angel Fire.
Oh, I remember those days.
good websites. I think they're all gone now, aren't they?
GeoCities closed. There's like a Save GeoCities campaign or something. Angel Fire, I think, is gone.
I think there was like a giant torrent file with everything.
That's what it was. Absolutely.
like 50 terabytes.
Download.
Anyway, so and the first site I've made was a fan site dedicated to the band called The Prodigy, you know, from England.
Oh yeah.
And that was my first website, and I just collected a bunch of interviews and photos and stuff like that, and every page had a different style of background and animation. Stuff like that. Yeah. So that's, I think I had conquered HTML, you know, in like one night. You know, it was like I opened some online tutorial, downloaded some free editor, you know, at like 9 p.m. and, you know, by like 9 a.m. I had like a 4-page website.
Wow. Nice.
Nice.
Checking out like the HTML goodies websites and copying and pasting or.
Yeah, I guess stuff like that. Yeah, I mean, HTML4 in its infancy was very, you know, straightforward. You know, you just open the HTML tag and open the head tag. You know, put a couple mm-hmm. things in there, and no CSS, nothing like that. Yeah.
How did you start working and doing freelance stuff? Or
I've been doing some freelance back in the day, here and there. You know, some random companies and you know, friends of. Friends and relatives and stuff like that, and then there was a little break. Then I moved to the States. Things kind of changed around a little bit. I didn't have my personal computer for a while, and I think it was like a year and a half or something. I've been using other people's computers, and only a year and a half later, I got my own desktop, and then moved on to laptops and. You know, kind of there was kind of a bit of a downtime for me that when I didn't think that the web was the place for me to develop my career, and then you know maybe I was like 22 or something like that, and I started thinking like so what is it that I really want to do, and like oh how about the web, maybe I should give it another shot, and I've never looked back since then.
Wow. That's a great story. That's cool. I guess you always kind of assume. Like you're just like, oh, I'm going web all the way, but that's a cool story that you came all the way from Russia and so I guess let's if you do some freelance work, I know you work you have your own company, right? It's Conspire Designs, correct?
Conspire Design, yeah. It's a tiny boutique design agency where I use provide services. We take care of stuff for you, but I do have distributed help here and there. You know, when I mm-hmm. can't handle the back end and all by myself. And like that. So yes, it's a bit of a it's my freelance identity. Although I'm kind of moving away from it towards my personal identity a bit more right now. It seems to be working out pretty well. Yeah, so Conspire Design, you know, I've made probably a dozen websites under that label. Well, now that I've transitioned away from the freelance world to more a startup world, you know, I'm not as active as a freelancer, but I do moonlight every now and then. Actually, I just came back from a client meeting.
Nice. So why don't you tell us about some of the freelance or some of the startup work that you're doing?
Right. Okay. So I was a freelancer for a while, for a few years, and then at some point things started kind of drying up, and I felt that I needed to get some experience working with larger teams and learn version control and bug trackers and stuff like that, which you don't really get to use on your own.
Yeah.
So I joined a big company. I started working at Sony. I think it was 2008, somewhere, maybe nine, I think 2009. Anyway, so I was there for like a year and a half, learned the ropes, you know, all the teamwork stuff, and jumping on different projects when they needed me, and on different teams. Mm-hmm. Learned the downside of corporate environment and the layers of bureaucracy you have to get through to make innovation happen. Then I was kind of I felt like I hit the wall. I knew everything I needed to know join the startup world. And that happened, the transition was happening like throughout the last year, 2010. And I think I quit my job in early December and started working with the company called Mingly at the beginning of this year. And Mingly is a CRM for everyone else. So it's sort of like customer relationship management, but it's more personal. So we call it PRM, personal/professional relationship management. It's an extension for Gmail that currently works in Chrome, but we're going to port it in other browsers as well. That's an interesting combination of, it's like it pulls in Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn together into your Gmail interface and allows you to track connections and set reminders and set alerts get social context on people that contact you and see their latest updates. Basically, we try to facilitate more active interaction and give people reasons to reach out, especially if you attend a conference like South by Southwest, for example, where you get lots of business cards and, you know, you add people in your networks and then you kind of lose track of who's what when, who said what to you and where you met them. So we kind of try to address this problem and let people, you know, handle this, this waterfall of connections, you know, that gushes in you in one certain, you know, event, just as you go along, if you're the kind of person who likes to or needs to network, you know, kind of try to alleviate the burden of keeping track of all your connections. So this is my current job. I'm also, you know, working with a lot of startups in the Los Angeles area, as well as a little bit in the Bay and around the country. I don't know, should I? I mean, I could probably go on, but yeah, if you have any more questions.
So, I guess, so let's get into the meat of, you're a user interface user experience expert. So let's get into some of the questions about that I think our viewers really would like to know as well. So, as a software developer, a lot of the times one of the biggest things that we run into is feature creep. And I don't think the user interface is, I think it suffers from the same problem. How do you How do you balance, you know, feature creep where you're adding features to the software, but you're trying to not clutter the UI or make the user experience something that's kludgy?
Yeah, that's always a tough one because the amount of features that your application has is used sort of like a, you know, the way to advertise your product. You know, we have so many features more than, you know, this other application or piece of software. And you really need to look at the immediate needs and use the 80-20 rule and realize that, you know, 80% of your extra features will only be used by 20% of the users. So it's okay to compromise and not deliver everything that they want. Well, you need to limit your scope and kind of, you know, forcefully, you know, reduce the amount of features for initial releases at least, because I think every application or web service needs to have needs to be good at, you know, at maybe a couple of things, not you know, not 25 things, you know, and you need to, as a service provider, you need to stand out to users as you know, a service that is really good at this and, you know, and one other thing, you know, and all the other things are kind of, you know, complementary. You just cover them as you go along, but, you know, when you try to go the Microsoft way, for example, you know, you can just kind of throw everything in there just so you can put those bullet points on the box. that usually, I mean, in today's world, it doesn't really help you. I mean, back in the day, maybe there was a sort of a way to you know, wow your customer base. You know? But I think even Microsoft is kind of going back to simplicity at this point, with the, you know, and with the prevalence of, you know, more user-friendly products and interfaces right now, you know, such as, you know, the, starting with the iPod, you know, going to the, you know, iPhone and iPad and even Android, which actually Google is also pretty guilty of offering too many features. I think people by now realize that they don't like to be confused. They like to see what's relevant, and they like to get they like applications that help them get the job done. You know, as opposed to, you know, applications that, you know, waste your time while you're discovering where everything is. So that's my long answer to this question. Thanks a
lot. All right, there is no way we could fit that entire interview in one part, so we will be back with the rest of it next week. I want to thank Vasily for coming on the show. That wraps up this episode of Face Off. I want to remind you can subscribe to the show by going to faceoffshow.com/subscribe. You can also leave feedback for the show using Twitter, Facebook, whatever. Go to faceoffshow.com/feedback. Check us out. Like us on Facebook. Subscribe to us on Twitter if you wouldn't mind. We appreciate it. Thank you for listening to the show, and we will see you guys next week.